takes a site visit to the landfill tomorrow afternoon before meeting back at the county courthouse in Colville for a work session starting at about 4 o'clock. In the studio with a preview, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So as I mentioned, the council starting off with the field trip to the Three Mile Canyon landfill. What's this for, I guess, in relation to the solid waste action plan that you looked at last week?
So one of the things we've been planning on doing for quite a few years, and it made it into the master plan as well, is to expand into the next cell of the landfill. And so Tim Loveday, our landfill director, has been working on that for the past couple of years. It's quite a long process, and not just the construction of it, because you have to. It'll be our first line cell at that landfill, so that it captures leachate and doesn't allow that to go into the water sources. But also, just the permitting of that takes quite a long time. So we've got all that part completed, and it's time for the council to see some of the results of their budgeting. Quite a large project.
Right. Okay. Let's see. An update on Chalk Creek Road. At the retreat last spring, a council member suggested a road project that would link Chalk Creek up to the Mirror Lake Highway. So is that what we're talking about?
That's what we're talking about. We're ready to release a contract. We've gone through a bid process on that to get a design firm ready to design that road. It's actually quite a long story for this road. It goes back to the 1970s when oil and gas was being developed up in the area. The commission at the time put some money into grading a road, building a bridge, putting in some culverts out in that area on this right-of-way, but never built the road. And we haven't since. So it's coming back at this point. It's probably more of an economic development project and a tourism project than anything else.
Okay. So the link is what, less than 10 miles?
Yeah, it's 9.7 miles, 7.5 miles, according to the staff report. There might be some right-of-way changes along the way. We do have right-of-way for it right now. But we're talking to, there's three landowners in the area, and we're talking to them to see if they have any other ideas about trading some right-of-way for land up there. And we'll see how that goes through the design process.
And then how much do we have funded for the construction?
We don't have the construction funded at this time. That would be considered as part of the 2019 budget process.
All right. And where does it pop out at 150?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. So we're going to be taking a tour of that before the October 10th meeting, similar to what we're doing with the landfill. It'll just take a lot longer. So I'll learn those details when we get up there.
All right. And this would be a through fare. I mean, if somebody wanted to get to the High Uintas, they would be able to cut through I-80 there.
Exactly. We're not sure whether we would build that as a paved surface right away. It could be a gravel road to begin with that would be serviceable and able to be maintained any time of year. But we have to have all those discussions as we go through the design process to see what ultimately the council wants to do there.
All right. I mean, and have you talked to the neighbors? I mean, this is something they want. It's pretty nice up there with not a lot of traffic.
Absolutely. I mean, I think just like with any other connection, there's pluses and minuses to it, depending on your purview. But, you know, we're getting out there public about going through this process. Again, like I said, this project has had money put into it in the past. It's just been quite a while. So it's a project that's been around for a long time.
And annexation for Mountain Regional, I think this is, again, connected to the annexation of community water?
I'm not sure if it's connected to community water. It's a property in the Frostwood area. So I'm not sure that that's exactly what it's connecting. It's just a property that's not part of the service district right now and has applied to it. So we're going through that process.
Okay. The council meeting as the Board of Equalization. This is when you start to see a lot of property tax exceptions asked.
It usually is. This year has been, as the assessor has been reporting each week, unusually low. I was looking at the report. The proposed change in property tax collections through all of the protests so far is only about $38,000 of impact. So a much shorter list than the council is used to seeing in the past.
Okay. One of those is the discussion of possible approval of Save Our Stage Foundation's request for an exemption. This is for the space that they acquired underneath the formerly Main Street Mall, now the Parkite?
That is correct. So since they're a nonprofit organization, they're applying for that exemption. We'll see what the council does with that.
Yeah, I think there is some precedent with this, though, yeah? I mean, the Christian Center asking for something
similar? I think there's discussions all the time about the nonprofit status, and I've looked through the report. It seems like they've got their documentation together to prove the status that they're in. Of course, it applies to only the suite that nonprofit business is operating out of in that building. The rest of the building would still be considered under its current tax structure.
All right. Would they? The council could make a decision. It's noticed that way.
Absolutely, they can make a decision.
All right. Also, Mark Stemmler applying for a tax refund. Is this for a business or a home?
It's a home. He applied for primary home status and sent in the documentation, but there was a mix-up in the assessor's office about when that documentation came in. So the council needs to consider that as they decide on whether to give this refund or not.
And this is interesting here because I have heard of other stories where people, the title company is supposed to take care of it. Right? And then for the property owner to come back years later and find out that they've been paying non-primary taxes all along. I mean, talking about tens of thousands of dollars.
It could be. This case is a little different than that. This one doesn't have to do with title companies. It has to do with the home being rented. For instance, if you rent a home you can apply on behalf of that renter for primary home status. And then, of course, you as the homeowner benefit from that. And I believe that's the case here from reading the packet.
Okay. Let's see. Also, a memorandum of understanding with the county and the Forest Service concerning sage grouse habitat. What would this do?
But essentially, this allows us to be part of the process of development of these policies and plans for the National Forest System here in Utah. Our council has always been interested in the sage grouse listing and its protection. This is a little different than some of the other areas that are mostly private land that we deal with the sage grouse habitat. This is specifically dealing with the National Forest System.
In some areas, it's been a controversial topic. Is that the case here?
Not that I understand from the council. We'll see what their discussion is around that. I don't, and we're really not into the process yet. Really, when you're applying for cooperating agency status, you're applying to be kept informed and to be part of the decision making process along the way.
All right. Meanwhile, what's happening with the roadless rule issue?
Yeah, so we met with Kim Carson and our staff met with the folks at PLPCO this last week to get a better understanding of exactly what their timeline was and some of the definition. The council was questioning some of the definitions that they were using within the process, and I think they've gotten a little bit of comfort with that, but they're going to slow down and take another look at what we're providing back to the state before we bring that forwards for some public comment.
Okay. Probably wanted to ask you about now that the council has passed this temporary zoning ordinance with regards to these electric scooters and such, what happens, I mean, if somebody were to start bringing those up?
Well, I mean, I think the ordinance allows us to require that they do certain things, that they come in and they get the appropriate license under this ordinance, that they work with us on figuring out where they can be placed, how many they can place out in the community. we put this ordinance together in kind of a model of what Salt Lake has done, because they went through this process a little bit after they started to show up, but they learned a lot. So we're trying to learn from them on how we could get out in front of it, and then how we would develop our final ordinance in conjunction with Park City, likely, so that we're not inconsistent with each other, and bring that forward together.
Yeah, this seems different for some reason. It seems like usually temporary zoning ordinances are kind of put into place because you don't have any kind of
right.
ordinance. This is, we do have an ordinance, but it's not final. Is that why this is being done?
We don't have an ordinance around this. We put it in place so that we could develop a final ordinance on it. Which is, you know, kind of the idea of a TZO in the first place, so that you can study it a little further. But we wanted to make sure also that we put in something that was in place that was flexible, just in case they started to show up right now, so that we had some way to regulate that.
So we do have something.
Well,
it's not in the books.
Yeah, right? The TZO puts that in place.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Just that Timberline Service District is looking for board members. We had an advertisement out for that, but we didn't get any. And we're going to extend that. And also our Fair Board is looking for two board members for next year.
Okay. And nothing with regard to Oscarthorpe at this point, huh? The ranch?
Nothing that I'm prepared to talk about at this time.
Okay. Not for another couple of weeks,
yeah,
huh?
I would look at October 10th being that day.
Yeah, is that just because you need some more discussions on finalizing the agreements?
Working on final agreements, and of course that's the next meeting for the council.
Okay, Tom, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:28 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour, the Park City Planning Commission meeting at 5:30 tomorrow in the studio with a rundown. I have Planning Director Bruce Erickson along with Planner Tippi Moreland. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's talk a little bit about the continuation here. We've got, once again, the
RVs and parking, and all that gets continued again. And I want to bring up that this is a very, very complicated, very important issue for the community, and it ranges all the way between how hard you want to enforce something, which is the code enforcement section of the input to the Planning Commission tomorrow night, and personal responsibility. So Planner Moreland has been working on this for as long as she's been with us, which is about 18 months. She comes to us with a really strong background, but basically what we're doing here is it's almost impossible to define what a recreational vehicle is. And if we allow additional parking cars or vehicles parking in parking lots, then it's almost impossible for us to reduce parking regulations for accessory dwelling units. And so we're having to balance between reducing parking requirements for accessory dwelling units to add our affordable housing requirements and do what we need to do to allow folks to have additional vehicles in their parking lot. So we're trying to do that balance. After the outreach a month or so ago, the public was really clear that said, you've got all these weird things going on inside your code. Let's make sure we know what we're doing. And then the city council gave us pretty clear direction to change a lot of these things from the land management code, which is land use, to the municipal code, which is more about who's using the land after we do it. So Planner Moreland is in charge of that, and I think to a large degree her experience really helps us with this because she's really good at code writing.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background, Tippi.
Yeah, well, I studied planning at USC in Los Angeles and did a little bit of outreach work, as Bruce said, in the Thai community out there in the nonprofit sector in planning. And I did my master's up here at BYU, and I worked for Lehigh City before coming to Park City for 4 years, mostly doing code writing throughout that time.
And the historic district as well.
Yeah, and I worked primarily in the historic district in Lehigh City as well. And like Bruce said, with the outreach that we did on RV parking a little over a month ago, we heard what the public had to say, and we were trying to make sure that we take that into account. So we're going to City Council instead of back to Planning Commission next week with a work session, trying to get a little bit more clear direction on which way to go, given the public input that we had.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that it's too difficult to write good code that's going to satisfy all of this.
Right, exactly right. And what Planner Moreland has done is come up with five distinct options for the City Council, everywhere from status quo to just complete deregulation. Honestly, what we're doing, Leslie, is we're changing from trying to regulate the type of vehicle to making sure there's adequate parking. So as long as the vehicle is not in the right of way, not blocking a sidewalk, and not in the setback, then we're going to probably let that happen as long as the City Council goes along with that. There are some issues with respect to front yards, in that front yards are basically what makes the neighborhood the neighborhood. And the more we kind of abuse front yards, the less the neighborhood becomes a place for people and becomes either a used car lot, a business parking lot, or just a junkyard. So that's what Tippy and I are being really careful with and the rest of the planning team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first off, you told me how it's impossible to define a recreation vehicle. That doesn't sound difficult at all.
It's very, very difficult. So let's say I was a different person and I owned a Class A motorhome, which is a 43-foot shiny bus, never gets dirty. Everybody drives them on vacation. And if I used that vehicle to go to a work site, let's say at Olympics, and stay there for 2 weeks and then bring it home for 2 weeks, and then I took it camping the next week, is that a recreational vehicle or is that my personal commuter vehicle? We have the same issue with the little new Mercedes Sprinter vans, where they may be a bicycle mechanic's workplace for 4 days out of the week, and then that person might take it to Moab or Durango for the weekend. So, you know, Planner Moreland has had a real struggle trying to do this, and the public has really kind of come out. So we've given up trying to define things and said, we really don't care what you use your vehicle for. We need to protect front yards. We need to protect the right-of-way. We need to make sure we have enough parking.
So the right-of-way is considered the street?
The street or the property from the property line to the street that the city is in charge of.
Which is roughly 10 feet behind your curb in almost all sections of the community. The right-of-way is wider because that's where all the utilities live. That's where snow goes. So almost everywhere except in the historic districts, 10 feet behind the curb is right-of-way.
Okay. So it basically has to be off. Anything has to be off the street.
Yeah,
what if the same bike mechanic has his and he needs or she needs to park at, well, let's use the Woodside park area. What happens there? I mean, is there off-street parking?
There is off-street parking there, and that's part of the dilemma, is trying to balance the needs of accessible and affordable housing and encouraging that and not making parking be a restriction, and the personal choices of human beings that choose to do certain things. So what we're trying to not have happen, Leslie, in this regulation that we're working so hard on, and the county's working on it as well, is that if you have a vehicle parked that overlaps the right-of-way or overlaps a sidewalk, then it's virtually impossible to see what's happening when you're backing out of your driveway. And it's virtually impossible for folks on the road to see that you're backing out of your driveway. Second, if you park on the street or in Park Meadows where the bike lanes are striped, if you're parking in that bike lane, you've now disrupted our non-vehicle operations. And it's almost impossible to see little kids running out of the driveway if you've parked in front of somebody else's driveway. It's very, very difficult to have the garbage trucks come by because they need to pull in and out to grab the garbage can. If you're parked there, they can't do that, and the post office can't deliver. So there's a lot of personal responsibility that we're trying to implement into this code and make sure it works for everybody.
So also recommending that the seasonal restrictions be lifted?
Yeah.
Because right now, as of what, October 31st, these would you'd have to move your RV, what was formerly known as an RV.
Yeah, well, what we heard from our open house and the public input that we got was that a lot of residents actually use their RVs year-round. They like to go camping in the winter seasons. And we wanted to take that into account, which is why one of the options would be, instead of looking to regulate by use, perhaps if we look at something like vehicle size or driveway size, would that be a better way to regulate overall so we don't have to look at the time?
Okay, so you still have hair on your head, but you haven't pulled it up. But at what point did you guys just come to the conclusion? It's like we can't fix this.
Oh, probably after the open house. The public input was really, really valuable, and the city council input was really, really valuable. But all of the planners have been going through this for a year, and it's a lot of struggle and technical what-ifs and all this geeky stuff that we do. But finally, the assistant city attorney, McLean, and Tippy and I got together and said, what are we really trying to accomplish here? And are we doing it by defining vehicles versus is there a place for people to park? And so we've agreed that it's better to make sure people have a place to park than trying to define what their lifestyle choices are.
Okay.
And easier to regulate as well.
Sure. So stay tuned. That'll be brought again. We're going before City Council.
We're going to City Council for direction on the options that Planner Milan has put together for us.
Okay. And also a work session with regard to citywide strategic code enforcement. Anything in particular that you're looking here?
Yeah, that's coming back from the city council, and what we want to let the public know and the planning commission know is that there's more than one group that's responsible for code enforcement. The police department's responsible for it, and we saw a couple episodes over the last week on noise. Code enforcement, which is the building department, our department in terms of land use, sustainability in terms of the soil ordinance and prospector. I'm sure I'm missing some departments. Oh, parking enforcement. So it's not just the folks that work for the building officials that are code enforcement. And we want to let the Planning Commission know that. And the Planning Commission works really hard to write conditions of approval, and they get concerned if we're not able to enforce those conditions of approval, especially with respect to noise, parking, construction management. We've had a lot of issues in Old Town this year. We have a lot of contractors in town that are not used to working in Park City, and so they take advantage of the opportunities. And we have a lot of folks that don't understand the personal responsibilities of respecting the historic district. So they're doing some things that they want to do for their own choice as opposed to what's in the best interest of the neighborhood. So code enforcement is going to come and talk. Officer Latham is going to be there. Chief Building Official will be there. Jim Blankenau from Sustainability, who deals with our soils ordinance, will be there. We just want to talk to the Planning Commission and let them know that we're writing conditions of approval that can be enforced.
Okay. Finally, just wanted to ask you real quick about the Moonshadow condominiums. We're talking about 8 detached. We haven't heard this in a long time. PUDs?
Yeah, this is a sort of a special clause that happens up in Empire Pass. When Empire Pass was approved in the late 90s, Planning Commission wanted to do their best, and the City Council wanted to do their best to make sure we didn't have people living there year-round. So they were trying not to approve, quote-unquote, single-family development. On the other hand, they understood detached units rather than attached units as a townhouse. And so we have a couple of them up there. Larkspur is a good example of it. Nakoma is a good example of it. So this is just another continuation of it. All a PUD does is say you can make your unit not attached to another unit, but all the open space is held in common rather than your front yard or your backyard.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
No, thank you. I did appreciate the information this morning about food trucks. That's coming forward as well. We're moving forward with some other land management code changes, so we're quite busy, but it's all hiding in the background.
Okay, Tippi, Bruce, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time now, 8:40. It's the local news hour on KPCW. 8:52 now. Good morning. Well, even though it's offered the $100,000 social equity convener contract to the Park City Community Foundation, the Park City Council is hosting listening tours in the community to find out from stakeholders what's important to them. One of those meetings took place September 11th at the Lucky Ones coffee shop inside the Park City Library in the studio. To tell us what they had to say, I have Katie Holyfield, one of the co-owners of Lucky Ones. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yes, it was so cool that the city council came and was willing to take the time to listen to our population. And we gathered a really unique group, a lot of parents. People have a lot of vested interest, specifically in the disability community. And just wanted to get down and sit all together and ask them, you know, what was on their minds and what was the most important to them with social equity coming up. The way that Nan phrased it to me from City Council was they were looking for plans for the future and then also some low-hanging fruit, so things that they could take care of easily. And I think that we came up with a couple of those. Specifically, the mobility bus that we talked to them about having a better way of communicating for. We have one employee that works with us that is deaf. And so having a way that she can communicate with the mobility bus without having to call for a ride. And so that's something that they've already actually addressed and we've heard back from, which is really neat.
All right. So these listening tours really aren't open to the public. So they had approached you and said that this is we'd like to hold one here and then invite people who, what, with kids with special needs or things like that? Is that how it worked?
Yeah. They sent an email to us and then the National Ability Center, and they were wanting to hear kind of from the community and hoping that we could gather some people that we have met within this community that would have things to add to the conversation. So we have reached out. There was a co-housing group. So we had a couple parents from that. They are specifically looking to try and find housing for their adult children or their children that are younger that are moving into adulthood and trying to find housing and what that's going to look like in the future. So we had a couple of parents from there and then just parents from around the community that have dealt with this their whole life and dealt with different obstacles and know what they're up against.
Yeah. How many people were there besides the council? I mean, the people that came to talk to the council?
There was probably about 10 to 12.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, kind of kept it a small group, so it was really nice. Everyone could add a lot to it.
Yeah, and in addition to Nan Worrell, what was the other council member there?
Becca Gerber.
Oh, okay. So as an employer of people with special needs, I mean, did you have any specific concerns or questions for the city?
I think that what we brought to the plate was just bringing our experience so far. We're about 6 months in business, and just the great gains that we've seen in our employees. We've seen them come so far and just given that opportunity. Right now we have about 17 employees and we have at least double that that have applied online or come in to talk to us about jobs. So the need is huge and it is out there in our own community. And so we're about at our max right now for who we can employ just with the coffee shop. And so trying to set up, like, what does that next step look like? Even talking with the city about there are jobs around the city that they could employ individuals with disabilities. And we are more than happy to help train.
Right. I mean, and we certainly have seen that with Chrysalis forever, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we see the kids and adults actually, you know, cleaning up after big, large events. I mean, what are some of those other possibilities, do you think?
I think the transportation system would be really neat that, you know, the buses need to get cleaned and maintained at the Public Works building. So the Marsac building, that they definitely have some jobs in there that filing and cleaning and things. Basically, I want to get away from just cleaning, but more things that can be social and that they can be a part of the community.
Yeah, yeah. And I understand that certainly concern because, you know, you don't want – I mean, it's a minimum wage job, but as long as they're around other people, right, that's the social part of employment.
Yeah.
So they're happy to do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's, like, one of the biggest things that we've seen is just how dedicated they are to their jobs. Coming and they haven't been given the opportunity before. And so they are fully committed. They're working outside of outside of Lucky Ones on things at home that they know will make them better in the shop.
Yeah. What are some of your challenges, though, dealing with the special needs? I mean, because that's come up, I'm sure, as well.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it's just really like patience, that realizing that a lot of times if people aren't understanding or aren't doing things that I've asked them to do, it's usually not because they don't want to do it. It's usually because my directions weren't clear. And so, you know, taking a step back and realizing that I can do a lot more for them, I think it's been really cool. That's been a challenge, and just kind of testing my patience as well, which I think is huge and helping me grow. And then it's just anxiety, I think, is a big one, that a lot of our crew has a lot of anxiety. And so how do we push those boundaries but keep people comfortable and having fun and feeling safe in their job?
Yeah. So were the council members then receptive? I mean, did they have questions and comments for the group?
Yes, they were very receptive. Rocio from the city was there taking notes on the whole thing. So I know that they were probably going back to decompress. They heard a lot of information all at once. But so far, everything that I've seen from the council is so supportive and wanting to bridge the gap in this community.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of interesting when I think as they were listening, and then the Park City Community Foundation also asking, I mean, people, what does social equity look like? I think it depends on who you ask.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the special needs community, what does social equity look like?
I think it's just, so our main goal is meaningful lives. And so what does that look like? What does that look like to you? What does that look like to me? Employment is a big one. That's where we get a lot of our sense of identity from. So doing something that you enjoy doing, that you feel fulfilled in. Also just opportunities outside of there, that a lot of what we heard from parents that I hadn't really thought about before was social opportunities too, that, you know, these are kids that maybe never get invited to a birthday party. So how do we help them make their social life as full as possible? That was a huge one that I heard. And then adulthood, that you always hear the parents talk about, there's this huge cliff at 21. And I don't even know if that's a strong enough word for it, that all the services stop and it's kind of you and your adult child, and you're trying to figure out what their life is going to look like and how they can be a part of this community and have a full life.
Yeah. Real quick, how's the business going? Are you guys doing okay?
Yeah, it's going really well. It's been amazing. Like I said, we have 17 employees. So it's been fun to just be able to have that impact in the community. A huge help. We had a year of free rent at the space that we're in right now. So that has been amazing to help us get on our feet and help us have the impact that we're not stressing over having the hours and wages, and we can have our employees on and we can give them hours and we can give them days and we can get them out of their house and in front of the community. And no, it's been wonderful.
Okay. Katie, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming in. Katie Holyfield, again, one of the co-owners of Lucky Ones Coffee. KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock.